Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us.
Today I'm joined by Dr. John Kim from the Georgia Integrative Medicine Clinic in the US. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure and honor to share this wonderful therapeutic known as low-dose naltrexone.
Thank you. So could you tell me your qualifications, please?
I'm a physician originally trained in family medicine, then Chinese medicine, integrative medicine, preventive medicine, public health. Before I went to medical school, I was doing research, basic science research in biochemistry, and I was a Howard Hughes Fellow for pharmacology.
And when did you first hear about LDN? How long ago was it?
So this is really interesting part is that, you know, I have gone through two residencies, two fellowships, and including integrative medicine fellowship with Dr. Andrew Weil at University of Arizona. And those time spent in training, I've not heard of LDN. I did not learn about LDN actually until a patient of mine came to me and said, hey, listen, I have a thyroid issue and I've done this research and I just can't get a doctor to prescribe me LDN or low-dose naltrexone. And would you at least do the research for me, because you're one of the few doctors that listen to patients and you have an open mind. So I said, sure, let me do the research. And when I did the research, I was very surprised that the fact that this has been well documented, utilized extensively since Dr. Bihari's use in New York, and all the evidence seemed to indicate very little risk and all possibilities of benefit. So I told the patient, yeah, sure, let me go ahead and prescribe the medication. And it's going to be a bit of a exploration in both parts. And the amazing things happened. Her thyroid diseases began to reverse. And over several years, not only her thyroid issues reversed, but she conceived and delivered a baby. And so that person made me think a lot about possibility. What else is possible with LDN? Me being a cautious practitioner, I had to go very slowly for next about 5-6 years. And I would target out other patients with thyroid conditions. And I began to see a pattern that I can't do with other medications. Because other medications in conventional medicine, we can replace thyroid hormone in different forms, but I don't have a possibility or ability to reverse illness, reverse thyroid disease. We just let it go until it goes into total failure, and you just up the dose. And in this case, with LDN, I began to see patients whose doses can be halved. Some patients, they would basically become drug-free, and then other cases I would see the antibodies related to hypothyroidism would be lowered in number.
And did any of your patients experience any negative side effects when first starting?
In the beginning, none of the people really experienced any of the side effects. But as I began to use LDN more in depth, I began to see side effects. And one of the things I've run into is that typically the LDN, low-dose naltrexone, in the literature is considered between 1.5 and 4.5. But I've noticed that in patients with what I call low endorphin reserve, where a patient has been sick for a long time, people don't, those patients are not feeling well for a long time and their daily activity is compromised. In those patients, I've seen that the 1.5 milligram can have a paradoxical effect. The patients can not sleep. It can create insomnia, and I think that's well documented. The patients with PTSD, the LDN also can cause vivid dreams related to the PTSD, further can create trauma. And in such cases, I began to experiment with lower doses. So I would begin using 0.5 milligrams or even lower. So now, today, I start even 20 micrograms and then do a rapid ramp to get them to the 1.5 milligram. So other side effects that I've seen is some nausea. I have patients that even could not tolerate even 1 microgram of low-dose naltrexone. They just feel really, really bad and in pain. So again, I think that their endorphin response reserve is quite low and they're not tolerating this dose.
And you were talking about thyroid conditions. Have you prescribed for other autoimmune conditions now?
Yes. It's thyroid, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and was the first thing that I started treating. And then when I saw that and the effectiveness of LDN for treating thyroid conditions, I said, hey, if it works for Hashimoto's thyroiditis and the mechanism is through correction or modulation of our immune system, why not? Why wouldn't it should, in theory, work for Graves' disease? So I began to treat patients with Graves' disease. Graves' disease is very interesting because I'm getting more, it's not the response to LDN response to Graves' disease, I would say maybe somewhat lower than Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So, but I have several patients who are doing very well and they are in remission and from Graves' disease with nothing more than using low-dose naltrexone. And then I got, again, as long as I can understand the mechanism by which LDN works, I decided that maybe we can do more. And again, the literature also helps us. So I began to treat patients with MS, and we have gotten amazing results, including one patient who is actually in remission from MS. So she almost was not able to walk, and now she is climbing Mount Kilimanjaro and traveling all over the world and being able to enjoy very high quality of life. And then other patients, other rheumatological conditions such as psoriatic arthritis and many, many other conditions. One thing that I really noticed that is that through my practice, I'm beginning to see LDN beyond just what we accept in literature. So, for example, I've had some patients with dementia and Parkinson's disease, and LDN, I believe, has helped to mitigate or slow down or some cases reverse, not fully, but some effects of dementia and Parkinson's disease.
What about cancer?
Cancer is one area that, and I think that I have recently accepted a position with Miami Cancer Institute with Baptist Health of South Florida. And the reason for that is that in my current practice and private practice, I think that my experience with autoimmune diseases have been extensive, and I've seen excellent results with low-dose naltrexone for treating autoimmune conditions. But for cancer, I think that my experience, to be honest, I just don't have enough patients coming to me who have cancer. And the patients that I've treated with cancer, I am not able to effectively or to say that it works or doesn't work with cancer. What I have seen is studies, especially by Dr. Bergson in New Mexico, who is combining the low-dose naltrexone and alpha-lipoic acid. So I began doing that as generally part of my treatment of cancer, but I'm looking forward to my new position where I will be able to see more of the patients. Right now, I have developed a bit of a reputation to help patients with autoimmune conditions. So I see a lot of patients with autoimmune and different kinds of autoimmune conditions, and that has really helped me to understand the function and utility of LDN for autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting to me is some of the cases where I'm using LDN maybe somewhat differently from other people. So some of the things that I've seen LDN is to utilize LDN to improve insomnia, because one of the things that LDN does do is to increase the REM and REM sleep, decrease sleep disruption, and also enhances people to fall asleep. And that's one of the reasons I think, unfortunately, for the patients with PTSD, that doesn't work as well because it may get them back to the conditions or memories that are very traumatic because it's very, very vivid. The other things that I'm treating are things like tinnitus, migraine, endometriosis, and infertility. And I think what I'm seeing is that LDN has multiple chemical functions. So one is it does, through modulation of toll-like receptor 4, LDN has this ability to modulate the pro-inflammatory cytokines through the clear cell in the central nervous system. And they are the primary response to invaders, if you will, in our central nervous system. And as such, LDN is a very valuable tool. But in addition, it seems like LDN has other functions, such as it seems to have a very calming effect on the nerves. So the LDN can be, I think, used very effectively for treating neuropathies of different kinds. It also, as I mentioned earlier, it also helps with almost like an adaptogen by itself. So I often use LDN to treat patients with mood disorder because that having more endorphins seems to make patients respond better to the conventional and non-conventional treatments of depression and anxiety. Because it's kind of hard to feel depressed when you're feeling good, and endorphins give you that edge that you feel good. So while you feel good, it's difficult for you to feel either anxious or feel good and depressed at the same time.
And what do you do with patients that are already on strong opiate painkillers when they come to you?
Yeah, so the opiate patients are very interesting. About 50% of my practice is treating patients with severe pain using neuroanatomy technique. And I don't prescribe any narcotics at all, but we have the track record of helping patients to get off narcotic. And in this case, we use a phenomenon of low-dose naltrexone utilizing its micro-dose naltrexone, or in the literature also known as ultra-low dose naltrexone. And in this case, we use micrograms of naltrexone. Again, like I said, the usual dose that people use naltrexone is about 1.5 milligram to 4.5 in LDN amount. But it's very interesting because you can take microgram doses, which is 1,000 times less than milligram doses, and there are studies that demonstrate that in microgram dose of naltrexone results in better pain relief, and it also lessens the side effect. And I have a couple of my patients treated with this ultra-low dose naltrexone, and they're doing great, great, great response. Because I have chosen not to prescribe for narcotic, they still go to their pain doctor, and the pain doctors are quite pleased because instead of the pain, usually if you just give narcotics alone, the doses have to go up, 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 and that's when you have overdose phenomena and people get in trouble. But in this case, what happens is that the combination of a low-dose naltrexone and the neuroanatomic approach to pain that I developed over 20 years, we can actually re-educate the central nervous system and lower the dose of narcotic while the patient is reporting much improved pain. And such techniques actually, I think, warrant a lot of research coming because of the obvious problem with the narcotic overdose that is going on in our country. As a matter of fact, there's a medication right now that that is being studied combining ultra-low dose naltrexone and narcotic medication combination. It's not been approved yet, but it'll be interesting how the Oxitrax will work for patients.
And do you keep them on the ultra-low dose or do you increase it over time?
No. As their narcotic amount goes down, then I march it up because the low-dose naltrexone, I think that there is benefit. I think the key is to start the patients, depending on their narcotic history, and narcotic use history and their functional assessment of the endorphin reserve status, and then trying to match that clinically. And then generally, I march them up. And LDN really has been an invaluable partner for me to get my patients well.
You also mentioned the alpha-lipoic acid. What do you use as a protocol? Do you have a general protocol for LDN?
Absolutely. So the Dr. Bergson's protocol of using LDN and alpha-lipoic acid is published. Anyone can look it up. And I believe that he uses IV dose, so I researched more talking to pharmacists. And it seems like that protocol has a side effect that people can pass out. And I also don't, if GI system is working, I feel like that is the first thing that we should do. So alpha-lipoic acid, I generally like to utilize the controlled release form or slow release form. And maybe about, and that also depends on the person's ability to take the alpha-lipoic acid, because if you give 600 milligrams to everybody, some people who are very sensitive to it may pass out or get hypoglycemic symptoms, because alpha-lipoic acid can be a powerful agent to control lower blood sugar levels in diabetic patients. But it also has, for neuropathy, I know that alpha-lipoic acid and LDN are also very powerful combination to reduce inflammation in the nerves, and that makes it interesting, because most of the medications that we use are not necessarily work well in what we call hypophilic or hydrophobic environment. Hydrophobic environment means that it's not easy for charged molecules to enter and do its job. LDN, it seems like it can penetrate very easily. Alpha-lipoic acid also is fat soluble. So those two are very important. I believe that Dr. Bergson's protocol for utilizing alpha-lipoic acid may have to do with the function of keeping the blood sugar low, therefore not allowing the metastases to be and the tumor growth to be inhibited. But I think that, again, a lot of the studies need to be done, and that's one of the reasons I have accepted this new position in Miami for the Miami Cancer Institute. And I'm hoping that as a director of integrative medicine, I will be given permission to explore the roles, possible roles of using low-dose naltrexone and other proven therapies in a system-wide manner.
And do you use vitamin D as well?
Yes, of course, of course. But vitamin D, for me, I do use it if it's low. I do supplement it. It's not part of my protocol. Part of my protocol for cancer also includes fat-soluble vitamin C. That would be ascorbyl palmitate, because the reason is that otherwise you have to go through the vitamin C injections. And I think that there are multiple responses you can get from vitamin C. So, for example, high doses of vitamin C injections that's been documented by Dr. Jeannie Driscoll in University of Kansas or Kansas Medical Center, I think that those research shows that the vitamin C's can help formation of hydrogen peroxide, and then the hydrogen peroxide goes after the tumor cells. The dose that I'm using, I don't believe that vitamin C dose is high enough to do that. So it doesn't replace the need for IV vitamin C treatment, but again, it has to do with my current practice setting that IV therapeutics is not very easy for me at this time. And by using the fat-soluble vitamin C, what I'm doing is to be overcoming the 230 milligrams per day required the amount that can be taken in by the body. There's no formal studies that the fat-soluble increases the amount yet, but it makes sense to me. I think that that fat-soluble forms of therapeutic can be extremely valuable. Another example of that is FFL glutathione, where the FFL group is attached to glutathione, and multiple people have tried to play with the different formulations, having micelles or have but I think that the actual chemical alteration to make the molecule more hydrophobic is probably the cost-effective and the best solution for some of the molecules to encourage them to go where they need to be going to do their job.
And you were saying that you weren't taught about LDN in medical school. Do you think that's likely to change anytime soon?
I don't think so. I think that, you know, think about integrative medicine. Integrative medicine is now being discussed or at least covered more in elite medical schools. So if you look at the distribution of integrative medicine in the United States alone, really, it's really reserved for what I call first-tier medical schools like Harvard, Vanderbilt, Duke, Yale. It's not really penetrated a lot of the regular schools, with the exception of maybe University of Arizona, where Dr. Andrew Weil started the program. So, and even there, I think the medical students have a lot on their plate. I don't think they get enough nutrition. I think that the medical education system is archaic. I think where I like to see this break in more is in residency level, where residencies, where after doctors graduate medical school, they get trained, and that's where doctors learn to be doctors. And what I've done with my recent book is some sections, I've even published the patients, the lab results, not patient's identity, but their lab results, so that they can see after treatment with LDN that, you know, the TSH would start low, and then the TSH would normalize. T3 would be high, and then it would normalize. And then they would also see the antibody levels responding.
I understand that there is a medical school in Oregon that actually teaches LDN to the medical students. So that has to be a start, probably.
You know what? It has to. It has to start somewhere. I think that for me, that integrative medicine means working with patients, and that has really helped me to learn about LDN. It's just to the nature of my practice, about 50% is dealing with intractable pain. The other 50% is dealing with patients who have complex problems that they really can't get answers. And what I found is that LDN is not, you know, doesn't cure everything. I think that it's dangerous to say one thing can do everything. If you do LDN, you don't need to. You still need to practice good medicine, but LDN can be an amazing tool where autoimmune diseases, especially, a lot of the tools that we have are not benign tools. You cannot use steroids forever. You cannot use immunosuppressants forever. And I think that LDN also helps you to understand the nature of the disease. Like, I'll give you an example. I had a longest time thinking, how can LDN work for HIV? So when I began to read more about HIV, I found out that HIV actually is not strictly immune deficiency condition. It's really immune derangement, meaning that immune system is not functioning the way it's supposed to be functioning. So similarly, we can think about cancer. Is it also possible that in cancer, patient's immune system is deranged? It's not doing what it's supposed to do. So like in my practice in the beginning, when people have autoimmune disease, we would just use LDN. And then inevitably, we would have patients who LDN isn't good enough. It's not doing the job by itself. So what I have done is more research, more reading, and more talking to other people, and I found out something very fascinating. What I found out is that if you have an autoimmune disease, it makes sense to check the person's autoimmune profile. And what I mean by this is not by doing a conventional testing of things like C-reactive protein, doing an ANA check or autoimmune profile. And of course, I do that. Part of my assessment is to screen for their risk of developing autoimmune conditions before giving the them on LDN. But if the patient does not respond to LDN, I think that a lot of sometimes that doing additional testing of either allergy testing to see if they're allergy to both respiratory allergens, fungus, you know, things like fungus, trees, grass, as well as food allergens, both IgE and IgG, can make sense. Because again, if we're looking at autoimmune diseases as immune derangement, then you're looking for places that the immune system is not functioning the normal way. And I think the LDN is a powerful tool. But like I said, there are patients who don't respond to LDN alone. And one patient had a double rheumatoid condition, and LDN alone wasn't doing it. Acupuncture wasn't doing it. So what I finally did is I did testing on the food section, and the patient stopped eating that food. And I used immunotherapy to reteach the body to forget to let go of the allergens that person had. An amazing thing happened. Her both of her rheumatologic diseases disappeared. To the point when she went back to her rheumatologist, they said, "Oh, we made a mistake. We're sorry." And the patient said, "Hey, you mean to say that my lab and my my X-ray were all conspiring together? That's unbelievable. That's not likely. I think it's more like that the LDN plus the immunotherapy that Dr. Kim asked me to do is working together and is resulting in this remission."
You mentioned your book. Would you like to tell us the title of the book and when it will be available?
You know, I'm hoping that the book will be available in December. The press release went out some days ago, but it's the title of the book. I put it as Understanding Low-Dose Naltrexone Therapy, and then it's a subtitle is Cure for Autoimmune Illnesses, Cancer, and Chronic Diseases. And I have to contact my old editor and see if she is available to take this job, because she edited my first book, The Tao of Healing, and she did such a great job. So I want to see if she can edit this book as well.
You said that you're going to be moving. Can patients still come and see you before you move, or are you fully booked?
Yes, I think both. Okay, patients are coming to see me. And from my understanding is that my patients, when I interviewed with them, they assured me that even though I'll be in a cancer center, I'll be seeing mostly cancer patients, but I will not be forbidden to see other patients. And I'm really hoping that would be the case, because I feel like the autoimmune approach that I've developed can help patients, and especially patients who are not good candidates for conventional medicine in terms of long-term steroid use, or the immunotherapy itself can be very harsh to some patients. So I'm hoping that I would be allowed to do that. And the other part is that I have this idea that some forms of cancer may involve the host, the patient, developing what I said about immune derangement, that maybe their immune system is obsessing over something else, maybe food allergen, and as a result, or they have an undiagnosed autoimmune condition. And I've seen that, because once you develop cancer, I think you stop looking, because cancer is such a deadly condition. You want to just zone in on that. So, but I'm hoping to do is maybe be allowed to do other observations, observe their autoimmune, is there autoimmune condition, is there. So this can be more formal in terms of formal research, or it can be just a clinician's observation. I mean, I remember a long time ago in London, the cholera epidemic was controlled by Snow, Mr. Snow, or Dr. Snow, that did not know the mechanism. It was just he used epidemiology to isolate the wells that were likely to be responsible for cholera. So he didn't know the exact mechanism, but all he had to do is shut down those wells or water pumps, and then he was able to help. So I know that the the field of medicine, of course, relies on collaboration, cooperation, and that's part of the reason I've accepted the position in Miami. But I think there's still room for one person to make observation, and then through communication, through book or through organizations like your organization, to reach out and ask these questions that no one else is asked.
Thank you. And thank you very much for your time sharing your experience with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.